Hi folks, I'm Mark Fallows and this is the Impossible Network podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe on iTunes or your favourite podcast player. And please leave a rating and a review because it helps more people find us. If you want to find out more of what we get up to or suggest who we interview next, follow us on Instagram at The Impossible Network or visit theimpossiblenetwork.com. Okay, let's get started.
There's such a value in bringing people together and bringing people together around helping each other, helping the public, you know, whatever that is, supporting each other. It's why we're here. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is.
Born and raised in New York to an American mother and Danish architect father, a community activist grandmother and twin brother to Scarlett Johansson, he's on a mission to save lives through renewable energy, is this week's guest, Hunter Johansson. In part one, Hunter shares his experience of growing up in Manhattan, the values passed on to him by his family, friends and mentors, and finding his path and purpose in life through building community and social activism. In part two, Hunter explains his NGO's mission to save lives in hurricane-hit regions by installing solar power units in first responder, fire and police stations, and how he co-founded Solar Responders with London-born, Las Vegas-based fire captain Richard Burt. Hunter discusses his mission to help the disadvantaged people of Puerto Rico, still devastated by the 2018 hurricane, and his vision to extend the renewable technology to other regions threatened by the ever-increasing risk of life-threatening hurricanes and climate change. Finally, we cover his principles, his influences, and his impossible advice. I hope you enjoy the thoughtful, humble, yet indomitable spirit of Hunter Johansson. Hunter, welcome to the Impossible Network podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to be sitting down face-to-face with you here at ACAST today, not at Neuhaus.
Yes, it's good to be in Manhattan, good to be here.
And on this fine winter's morning.
Mm.
Well, let's get started. So, as you probably know from, if you've listened to some of the other podcasts, we always start with upbringing, but we'd like to get into understand more about your childhood. So maybe we could start with where you grew up. I believe it was New York.
Yes. So this is a great first question. Family is so important to me. It's my guiding light. You know, I have two sisters, one of them a twin sister and an older brother and an older half brother. And we're a really tight unit. And it just makes up, it's such an important part of my life. People often ask me, like, so what do you do? Like, what do you do for fun? And I'm like, well, I hang out with my nieces. I hang out with my family. But we all grew up here in Manhattan. So we're native New Yorkers, grew up in the West Village. It's nice to be close to the water. So I grew up, you know, going, hanging up on the river before Hudson River Park was there. So That was a big part of my life. Yeah.
And mom and dad, Karsten and Melanie, I believe.
Yes, yeah, so my dad. He's from
Danish?
Copenhagen.
Copenhagen, great city.
Yep, a great city. I was there once when I was like 14. And my mom's from the Bronx, and they met in Copenhagen, and then ended up coming back to New York in 1970. When the city was a very different place. So. Yeah, and then started, you know, raised a family in New York, in the West Village.
So I've got to ask a question.
Yeah, please.
When it's Denmark versus the USA at soccer.
Ooh.
Oh, it's a tough one.
That's a tough one. Yeah, my roots are Danish, and who, you know, everybody loves an underdog, even though, you know, the Danish team is good, but I got to go USA. It's tough. I know. it's real tough, but USA all the way.
All right then. Okay, so your father, I believe, is an architect, mm-hmm. and your mother a producer.
Yeah, my dad, he's a trained architect, went to school in Copenhagen, School of Architecture. When he came to New York, it was a tough market. You know, the economy wasn't good, so he got into construction and was a construction manager for a long time, started his own construction company. My mother, producer, managed my sister since she was seven, so that was her trajectory. Yeah.
All right. So you've been on a very interesting journey and now having significant impact on people's lives, and particularly in the Caribbean, we'll come and talk about. If you're reflecting on your parental support and the guidance he gave you, how's it affected the direction you've gone in your life? I mean, your sister clearly has gone in a very different direction and has made an impact in her own right.
Yeah.
And for our listeners that maybe don't know and haven't done the research, you have a bit of a celebrity sister who's called Scarlett.
Scarlett Johansson, my twin sister.
Your twin sister.
Partner in crime.
There you go. That must be a fun night out when the two of you get going.
Yeah, we hang out. When we go out, we go out. We've, you know, we travel together. We're a huge part of each other's lives. We're in constant communication. Yeah.
So what about your parents? What impact do you think they had, both your father and your mother? Because everyone we speak to, the parents have different roles in terms of the child's upbringing and the impact on the direction that they've gone.
Yeah.
And there always is an impact.
There definitely is always an impact. My mother was a full-time mom, and I think her biggest attribute was building this community, this family unit, and keeping it together for as long as she did. My mother, she's a great nurturer. She's extremely loving, and you know, there were, growing up in the city and growing up not a wealthy family for by any means, there's hard times, and she was able to really carry us through that and shielding us, I can say, because New York is tough, and for those who are new to New York, New York was very different in the 80s, and it took a very thick-skinned person to bring a family unit through that. My father, you know, he was a very loving man. He worked hard for his family, did what he could through his faults. And I think he taught me how important family is, how important, you know, brotherhood and sisterhood is. And to this day, I think family is the most important thing, and supporting each other is the most important thing.
How do you think your character, I mean, you're a twin, obviously, but the youngest in the family?
Right.
How do you think that's impacted you in terms of the direction you've gone, or your self-perception and your view of the world?
Yeah, I like that question. I had a conversation with a friend of mine. She's a middle child, and she was saying how the second born is kind of a bit forgotten.
Yeah.
And she was saying to me how I'm the baby, and like the baby always gets the most attention.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I had to share that with my sister. We were happily share it with my sister. We shared everything. And so I think I started my life, started my life from day one, having to compromise, having to collaborate, having to listen, having to acknowledge that I'm not the only one around here, that I'm not the most important, you know, and so I had kind of a different perspective. And I also had the perspective of my older siblings. You know, my older sister, Vanessa, she's a mentor. She's someone I just look up to a lot. And she was a guiding force in my life through things that my parents didn't have the most input on, like, you know, things like college applications, or, you know, just like the life things that we go through with school and work and so on. She was always there for me and always told me how much that meant.
And how much older is she?
5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So she has one daughter, and then she's due in like 2 weeks with my nephews. So.
She's local, New York. As
she's
well.
Local village as well, and so I get to see my. We're all local, actually. So I get to see my nieces and soon to be nephew all the time. I have full access, which is great.
What does she do?
She's a mom. She does voiceover work. She went to school at Hunter College for social work and many different interests. She cooks. She's into art. She's an amazing mom. She's an incredible. My niece is a genius at 3 and a half, soon to be 4. And yeah, my older brother, who's 8 years older than me. He works in real estate. He and his wife had a daughter about 10 months ago. Mm-hmm. I was a beautiful girl, beautiful baby girl. And, you know, my brother, he's taught me so much about people and respect for people and making sure that I live life to the fullest and really challenging myself. You know, my brother is such a happy-go-lucky, positive person, and with a great sense of humor. And I think he has a very dry sense of humor. He gets that from, you know, being Danish. And so I think I learned a lot of my humor from my brother, which I think is extremely important to, you know, just to have in life, just be able to laugh and smile.
Nice. Well, growing up in the West Village and knowing, for people that don't know, the West Village, it's obviously on the west side of, towards the lower end of Manhattan, is by the river, as you mentioned earlier. But you talked about in the 80s, it was a very different city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember when I was growing up running around in fields in sort of the west and north of Scotland and climbing trees. I suspect you didn't really have that level of freedom at that time in New York. So what was play like?
Play was like...
obviously you had your brother and sisters.
Yeah. You know, my brother was, 8 years older. So when I was 7, he was 15. You're kind of in a different place. And especially in the 90s in the city at that time. Play was, what I loved about the city was that you had to go seek it. You know, you had this environment, this concrete brick environment. There's much more green now that didn't exist, when I was growing up. You had playgrounds, which, my mother brought me to a lot in Central Park. My grandmother would take me to, my sister and I, to Brighton Beach, to Coney Island. We got exposed to nature in that regard.
Yeah.
But you had to go. You had to get out there.
You couldn't just pull out. You couldn't front door.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you couldn't just drive there because we didn't have a car. So you'd have to take a bus to a train to a bus to get to the beach. So that was an effort. Walking out of your house, you kind of had to play. You had to make your environment like play with it. It was and make it your own. So if there was like a staircase or like a courtyard or something, you would play, you would play like, you would bounce a ball against the wall with friends and make a game up, I think probably similar to a lot of cities. I'm grateful for those times because it made me really appreciate when I was in nature. Mm-hmm. We would go upstate, in the summertime to Lake George, or whenever I was in a park, I would take full advantage of the trees and climb them and really enjoyed those moments when I was in nature because it wasn't every day.
And what was school like for the young hunter?
In elementary school was in the village with my sister, and we were in class together up until sixth grade. And
the one that's on the corner of Greenwich Street?
11th and 6th.
11th and 6th, right, okay, yeah.
The good old PS41. It was, my school was very diverse, so there was, backgrounds of all kinds, which is very different from what it is the village today. It was very inclusive, and I loved elementary school. I mean, my teachers, I think that school was just so special, and at a time where, the city in the 90s was going through this, cultural revolution almost. And then, the 90s were just a great time to be in the city, and especially in the village, which is full of, creativity.
Mm-hmm. So when you were at school, I mean, most people we speak to had a little sense of, well, some people don't, but some do have a sense of where they're going in life. Mm. What were you thinking at that time?
So when I was a young lad.
Yeah, a wee hunter.
a wee boy. I remember, man, I was, when I was like 8 or, around there, 10, I wanted to be a brain surgeon. And so I remember I asked my mother, I was like, I want to be a brain surgeon. She bought me a book on the brain. And I memorized the three parts of the brain, and I was like super into that. I remember really enjoying the Discovery Channel, and PBS. But I loved looking at shows about nature and trees and photography, and just kind of, it was just natural. I remember in the parks that we went to, I loved the trees. I was a small person looking up at these big trees in Central Park. My encounters with wildlife were dogs, cats, and rats. But I was never, fearful of that, It sounds kind of weird, but I actually was interested in watching rats in New York City, how they survived and how they were living. And, the city was just such a good introduction to the natural and human world. I'm just so grateful for the time here and just to be able to being brought up here.
The journey that you've taken, whether we call it social entrepreneurship, philanthropy, what set you on that journey? Was there anyone particular that was either a mentor or an influencer when you were growing up that started to change your perspective on the world and the problems that so many people suffer?
Yeah.
An encounter.
I really have to credit, my parents, my siblings, my family, my grandmother, who exposed me to everyday people, and to appreciate everyday people. and their stories and observing. I think one thing that you know, I don't know who to attribute it to. I really enjoy observing and watching my environment and taking in my environment. And so it was kind of like a natural, and I guess, you know, my parents and my siblings, my grandmother realized that. And they introduced me to many different situations. And I just think through that, I was able to gain empathy, you know, having an understanding of some part of what somebody is going through. And that carried me to this day. And it'll carry me throughout the rest of my life. And I have to thank New York for that, to be honest. It's not the only place that you gain that, but it was very helpful. My desire to expand that, to grow my influence outside of New York was in college, and that's where I went to Vermont, UVM in Burlington. And I got exposed to the natural world in a big way. It wasn't just...
What were you studying there?
Started off environmental studies. And I think it was my junior year or so when I switched majors to environmental economics. The specific major is community development applied economics, but I was studying environmental economics. And I knew that I wanted to impact the planet and nature and protect something that was so sacred and vital for us. So I understood that the best way to impact that was through the human environment. Mm-hmm. So while studying plants and shrubs was super interesting in Vermont, I wanted to bring it back to a human element because that's where I felt, you know, affecting people would allow me to protect the environment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I've read or heard somewhere that your grandmother, I believe Dorothy,
yeah,
was a bit of an activist.
She was
very sort of conscious of community and fought for affordable housing program back in the city. So obviously social impact activism is something that's part of the Johansson family to a certain degree.
Yeah, it is. It's a big part of our upbringing. You know, I remember political conversations were always big in our household. That doesn't necessarily mean that people are activists. Yeah, my grandmother was very active in her community, and even growing up, you know, just saying hi to her neighbors, saying hi to the door person, saying hi to the janitor, seeing people, respecting them, wanting to elevate them and empower them. I read all of that just by her saying hello to people. It was her intent to do that, to empower people. But she was actually, she was an organizer for Mitchell-Lama Housing in the 70s. And, you know, she grew up in Brownsville, Brooklyn. Tough, you know, in the 50s. She taught special education for 22 years. And she moved to Hell's Kitchen, I believe, in the early 70s, if not late 60s. I might be wrong there. But she lived in Hell's Kitchen for about 40 years. On 51st Street, and Hell's Kitchen was a very different. It was a lot of mafioso type people who were on the take in some way, and the housing situation there was controlled a lot by non-governmental groups, however you want to put it. And so my grandmother had to, you know, fight for her livelihood and ultimately for her neighbor's livelihood as well.
A few.
It was called Hell's Kitchen.
It was called Hell's Kitchen for a reason, right? Yeah. You know, and that name, as you know, cool as it sounds, had a really negative connotation.
Yeah.
Even in the you know, late 80s, 90s, when I'd visit my grandma, it was a place that my grandmother held my hand tightly.
It was not a salubrious neighborhood, that's for sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not the way it is now with Hudson Yards. So you just finished a master's as well in public administration. I saw on your Instagram feed.
Yeah.
Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very happy for the start and finish of that degree. Yes.
What made you do it?
I was at the time, so this was, I just turned 35 two weeks ago. And so at the time I was in nightlife. I was in hospitality. And I was in that job for a few years, and it was eating at my soul. Mm-hmm. I was out late. I had great friends in the industry. It was the type of work I was doing.
What group?
I worked in a bunch of dive bars. So I was bartending. I worked in Miami for an amazing group down there. It's called Koyo Taco. Uh-huh. But what I loved about the nightlife industry and why I got into it was I got to meet people. Mm-hmm. And I got to engage people, hear their stories, something I really always loved to do. And it was fun. It was a really fun time. You know, I was in my late 20s, single. But after a few years, I was like, you know what, this is not what I'm meant to do. And I remember sitting, I was about, you know, 29, 30, sitting on my older sister's, Vanessa's, sitting on her sofa. And I think I just got out of a shift or something, or, you know, got maybe a few hours of sleep and went to her place mm-hmm. the next morning. And I would just look disheveled, you know, and I was like, Vanessa, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm lost right now. You know, she broke out her laptop and she said, "You're going to grad school." And I was like, "All right," you know, literally yeah. like my hands up in the air. I'm so beyond grateful for that moment and for my family, because I knew that my family was there for me and they'll always be there for me in those like really down, dark times. And she was like, "Listen, this is NYU. Like, they don't require the GRE. I'm a terrible test taker. I did not do well on my SATs. I think my sister and I got the same score, actually, which is kind of funny. And so I applied, got in, and it was, to be honest, the best decision I've ever made. It brought me out of a very dark time in my life. And some people will criticize academia, and I have my thoughts on it as well and opinions on it, but it brought me out, and it allowed me to see a whole world that I didn't know existed, social entrepreneurship, uh-huh. you know, nonprofit sector. It was a big gift, and I'm thankful for it.
How did you go from environmental studies into entertainment and nightlife?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a strange sort of pivot.
Yeah. You know, it's such a interesting world, you know, and the city is full of opportunity. You know, there's something about some relationship between nightlife and philanthropy, business, social entrepreneurship, all of it, mm-hmm. entertainment. It kind of melts together in some ways. There's this innate urge, I think, in all of us to want to help, mm-hmm. to want to support each other. And it exists in every sector, job, whatever it is, probably some more than others, for sure. But I think tapping into that was my draw. That was like my pull. The pull that I felt was this sector. There's special, amazing people here, and I want to see. It was like this interest ever since I guess I was a kid to like explore. Wanted to see what was there, and there's so much value in bringing these sectors together. And just thinking about it now, it's something I'm constantly reflecting on and thinking about, how do these things meet? But there's such a value in bringing people together and bringing people together around helping each other, helping the public, you know, whatever that is, supporting each other. It's why we're here. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is.
I mean, I've heard you say in some other interviews that mm-hmm. you believe that helping people is the core purpose of life. Mm. And that, and aside from doing the work in entertainment and the work you've done, the environmental studies, you've also been quite involved in community programs in the city itself with, I think, believe Scott Stringer.
Yeah, so the current controller, he's hopefully, he will be the next mayor. You know, the one we have right now, I'm very displeased with, and I'm very excited for 2021 to get Scott into office. We need somebody who's on the ground, who's listening to people, kind of all those attributes that I talked about earlier. And I think I see so much in Scott, you know, my family and my grandmother, and he's a leader for the people. I think throughout my life, and you know, after my undergraduate degree and even during it, I saw the value of community and always wanting to build community. And so I was always searching for that. I had community in Scott's office, and he was the current Manhattan, or the former Manhattan Borough President. You know, there was community there. I worked on the Obama campaign and built an amazing community there. So I had all these circles, and when, you know, that moment in nightlife when I, you know, was there for a few years and I had this formed this amazing circle of people, you know, I think that there was this impetus for me, this urge for me to collaborate, you know, bring people together, build a new community around a mission that was aligned with everything.
Well, something more purposeful.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, purposeful. I mean, beyond purposeful. It's central to our lives. So, yeah.
Because you, after Hurricane Sandy, you collaborated with one of your friends, I believe.
My buddy.
Your buddy.
Mike Sininski from Rockaway, native New Yorker, native from, you know, Rockaway, Queens. He was telling me after Sandy, I was living in Chinatown at the time.
If anyone doesn't remember Hurricane Sandy, it was 2012.
Hurricane Sandy, October 29th, 2012.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hurricane Katrina was 2005. Yeah.
And it hit New York City.
Hit us.
I was evacuated from my building.
Where were you living?
I was in the archive.
Oh, you were in the archive.
Yeah, it got flooded. Windows were blown in. It was pretty bad.
It was terrible. Yeah. So my father was living down on Washington Street at the time. So this was 7 years ago. Yeah, and we had to seek refuge. You know, I think they called us Sandy refugees, which was, you know, it was in for Manhattan. You know, I think and for people growing up there, we had places to evacuate to. But if you were in Rockaway or Brooklyn. Far Rockaway, a lot of people couldn't leave and they were stuck. Yeah. And, you know, my friend Mike, whose family still lives in Rockaway to this day, beautiful family. Mike had the means to bring his family out, but there was, there was a 15-foot surge of water. Yeah. And people had to, you know, that people were on the second floors of their homes. If they had second floors, it was a very dire situation. And you know, he started this. You know, he's a community builder himself, and he started this, you know, collaboration with his friends and family and neighbors, and it turned into this nonprofit. And that's when I got involved. I was like, Mike, this is an incredible opportunity to help the most disadvantaged, at-risk New Yorkers. If you're born and raised in this city, you have a very close relationship with New York. It's just it's a part of you. New York. Even if I never move away tomorrow. I'm moving to Puerto Rico in 3 weeks. So if, let's say I live in Puerto Rico the rest of my life, I will always have my heart will always be in New York.
Yeah.
I will always be a Mets fan. And
did you say Mets?
Mets, yes.
Not Yankees.
The Yankees are, I feel like they're an easy.
Your mom's from the Bronx.
Yep. My grandfather's from Brooklyn and Queens. And when the Dodgers left, all of us became Mets fans.
Ah, well, there you go. Okay.
And my grandma's from Brooklyn too. So all the Dodgers fans became Mets fans because the Yankees are the Yankees, you know? Yeah.
I'm not even a New Yorker, but I've been here 9 years and I feel it's part of my DNA.
You're
now.
A New Yorker.
Yeah.
So 9 years as a New Yorker.
It's getting there. Yeah. 10, definitely. 20. I'll get the badge.
20? 20. So yeah, we have.
And Elaine's what? 2001.
Yeah. 18 years. Wow. So you're a New Yorker.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. If you live through that day and you're still here, you're a New Yorker.
Yeah. It was dangerous. And then I got September 11th.
September 11th. That was, you know, I think about September 11th almost every day. Mm-hmm. I was 17 at the time.
Yeah. I can't imagine. We've had quite a few guests that have talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. It's post-traumatic.
It is.
It can never. How can that event ever leave you?
You know, and it's not. It's like I'm. It's a willingness, though. You know, I think that event changed every New Yorker's life, and you know, my work in Puerto Rico with first responders, I think about it all the time. I think about the 343 firefighters that died. Mm-hmm. And made the ultimate sacrifice for not only the city, but for themselves. And I honor them every single day. in my thoughts and in the work that I do in Puerto Rico. It is it's a part of being a New Yorker. It's also just a part of being a human and giving respect to those who are willing to sacrifice their lives for us. It empowers me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice point to segue to solar responders.
Okay, that's all for part one. In part two, we dive into the solar responder story and Hunter's vision for saving lives with renewable energy. If you like the show, please subscribe and ideally give us a 5-star rating and a review because it helps more people find us. Just go to iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player to listen and subscribe. If you want to learn more or have someone you'd like us to interview, just visit theimpossiblenetwork.com or DM us on Instagram at @theimpossiblenetwork. This show is an Impossible Network production and is produced by Bettina McKaylee and Elaine Castillo-Keller. But for now, be curious, be creative, and seek out serendipity. See you next time.